Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to The Farm Report, and I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks. We are coming to you today, as always, live from the back of Roberta's Pizza. It's a sunny day here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And we are on the line with a regular guest on The Farm Report, David Haight, the New York State Director of American Farmland Trust. David, welcome to the show.
Erin, it's a pleasure to be here with you again.
So today we're going to be talking about this is going to be a word that's going to be hard for me to say. I went to the dentist this morning, so like half my mouth is numb, so I may have more foibles than normal. But the preliminary report for the 2012 Census of Agriculture. So what I want to kind of get clear before we talk a little bit about what we've learned from the report is kind of what is the census, what does it include, and who's included by it? So, David, maybe you can give us a little sense of kind of the background and who we're talking about when we talk about, agricultural producers or products or a farm.
Sure. Well, so, Erin, the Census of Agriculture is conducted every 5 years, somewhat similar to the traditional census that everyone fills out. This is a way to gather information about what's going on farms and ranches across America. So it's primarily conducted through a written survey of farmers across America. And they define the term farmer pretty broadly. So it's anybody that sells more than $1,000 in any type of farm product. So that's a pretty low threshold. So you could be talking about some pretty small farms that are mostly for personal use and people that are growing food, maybe selling a little bit, but not really doing it in a big way commercially. And then some of these are multi-million dollar businesses. So there's incredible diversity in the census, but it's generally considered to be one of the most authoritative sources of information about what's going on in terms of farmers and farm demographics and farm trends in America.
And do you know kind of why it got started, or what was the impetus for beginning to record some of this data?
You know, that's a really good question. I think one of the things that we see from the census is, it is collected on a national level, but then it's also broken down at the state and then at the county level as well. So it's really become this great resource of information for farmers, for trade groups, but also for policymakers. People are thinking about laws and budgets really as a source of good statistics, whether you're talking about a state legislator and what they're doing in Albany or what's going on in Washington. And it's really evolved to become this critical resource for people that are making decisions about agriculture around the country.
No, that makes sense. And then one more question of clarification. What's the difference between a farmer and a rancher?
You know, that's a great question. They don't disaggregate between those two in the Census of Agriculture. So a farmer is a farmer in regardless of kind of what you're raising and how you're raising it for the purposes of the Census of Agriculture. So that's fairly generalized for the census. I guess the one other thing I'll point out about the limitations of the census, the limitation is really good in tracking farmer trends. It's not really good at tracking farmland trends. So, for example, here in New York, back in the late 1800s, we had over 17 million acres of land in farming. And if you looked at the census of agriculture today, you'd see that it's closer to 7 million acres today. And so the census can tell you that the farmers say there's less land in farming today. They don't tell you what happened to that additional acreage. And so it's not the best indicator of what's happening to our land, because in New York, a lot of that reverted into forest. And so it's not always a good tracker of land trends, but it's a really good source of information about what's going on with farmers.
And so we're going to be talking today about the preliminary report. So what's not included or included in the preliminary report that's different than the full report, which I think comes out in May, right?
Yes, yeah. So the full census report, you know, if you have people that love numbers, if you have data geeks out there, this is a really good place for you. So there are thousands of pages of statistics about farmers and what race they are, what gender, what ethnicity, how much money they make, how much money they spend, how much land they have, where what they grow. There's so much data. It's going to be released in May, and that will be at the national level, the state level, and at the county level. What we have right now is a small piece of that gives us some snapshot of trends at the national stage and at the state level. And so we've got a little piece to nibble on now, but come May, we'll have a lot more.
So you work for American Farmland Trust, and what would you say, like, for your organization, what are your kind of go-to numbers? What are you guys, like, you know, at the edge of your kind of seats, pressing the refresh button when the report comes out, waiting to kind of hear about for your organization?
You know, that's a great question, Aaron. So there's a few things that I think are really telling from the census. One, farmers manage a lot of land. You know, the census tells us that nationally farmers manage, you know, over 900 million acres of land. That's almost half the land in America. Their footprint on the landscape is a significant one. Here in New York, it continues to be about a quarter of all the land that we have in the state of New York, a little bit over 7 million acres. So their ability to help us address things like climate change and water quality issues, because they manage so much land, that their farmers are really critical allies in big environmental issues we face. Second, farmers have a big economic footprint, and it's growing. We saw nationally that farmers across America sold $395 billion in farm products in 2012. That's over a 30% increase from the previous 5 years. So, again, they do these census every 5 years. So the 2012 numbers are what was just released. The previous census was in 2007. So a 33% increase while our national economy was struggling. Farmers were selling more and more nationally. Here in New York, we saw a 23% increase to almost $5.5 billion in farm products sold by our farmers. So those are the first two. The third is a lot of interest nationally in beginning farmers and people that are just getting into agriculture. And one of the interesting trends that we saw nationally, and I think will be fun to explore when the full census comes out, is there was actually a decrease in the number of beginning farmers around the country. And nationally, there was a 20% decrease. Here in New York, there was an 11% decrease. So that is a really interesting number, particularly when you consider the growing age of most of our farmers. And I guess that's the last trend that maybe I'll touch on, Aaron, that nationally there was a 7% increase in the number of farmers that are over 65. Here in New York, it was almost a 10% increase in the number of farmers that are over 65. So here in New York now, according to these preliminary numbers, roughly almost 30% of all of our farmers in New York are over 65 and you would think are going to be retiring and getting out of agriculture in the coming years. And so that is a big demographic trend that the census is pointing us to, and we should be paying a lot of attention to.
So I would assume that some of these numbers then will help kind of direct how you allocate your organization's resources in the coming years and as you look forward to do planning. And so I want to kind of go back and talk a little bit more into the kind of main points that you outlined. So talking about the amount of land, you know, it sounds like a lot. Half of the U.S. is owned or is in farms. A quarter of New York State. You know, if I'm looking here at kind of the change, or what is it, the change in land and farms for New York State, it's showing that there was an increase. So is this an issue we don't really have to worry about anymore? Is farmland kind of doing good or bad? I mean, it's hard for me to I think you hear like, wow, there's this huge volume of land, but is that enough? How much is enough? How are we doing in that area?
You know, that is a great question, Aaron. And I think the answer is that these numbers, again, the land and farms category of the census is, in our opinion, not the best source of information about what's happening to our land. For years in New York, we were losing land from active farm use. And, you know, you would look at those numbers and say, where did that land go? And from the census, you just didn't know. And I think a lot of that land in New York reverted into forest. There is another source of information called the National Resources Inventory that is also conducted by the United States Department of Agriculture. And that is actually gathered by using satellite photos and looking through GIS systems. They're able to actually objectively determine what's happening to our farmland across America. And so according to that information, we've lost 425,000 acres of farmland to development in New York. Nationally, since the early 1980s, according to the NRI, we've lost over 23 million acres of farmland to development, about an acre a minute nationally. Now, candidly, that wouldn't really make a big difference if it was equally spread across the country or equally spread across New York, but it's not. Those trends are highly concentrated in specific places, like the Hudson Valley, eastern Long Island, the Finger Lakes, and the Lake Ontario Plain area of New York, that there are places where those trends are particularly magnified. And so we really need to be careful about how we interpret these statistics. I'd love to tell you that we're not losing any more farms and that that problem has gone away. It hasn't. It's just that these numbers aren't the best ones to help you fully understand what's going on today.
That makes sense. So and when you say that we lose farmland to development or we lose farmland to forestry, I want to start with development. I'm guessing that those regions in New York State that you outlined are facing pressures from development because they're closer to high-value urban areas? Or why is it that you're seeing concentration of farmland lost in those particular spaces?
Well, the two areas, you know, nationally, the American Farmland Trust has done studies and identified, you know, areas of the country that are under the most threat. And three areas of New York have always bubbled to the top of those studies, the Hudson Valley and eastern Long Island. And the primary reason why those are under threat of development is because their proximity to, you know, the millions of people that are in New York City and people that are moving out of the city or buying second homes, but the people, because of that population center, and it's a growing population center, and so that is, you know, been a source of development pressure for decades. The story is very different when you look at the region that we call the Finger Lakes Lake Ontario Plain. So that's an area from essentially from Albany to Buffalo. And if you were to go, drive from Albany and then go west to the eastern shores of Lake Erie, incredibly wonderful soils, great access to water, the Finger Lakes, the Great Lakes. But what the trend has been up there, they're not growing in terms of populations. Actually, in many cases, they're losing people. The trend has been people are actually moving out of upstate New York cities onto the farmland in the suburban and rural communities. So cities like Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, Schenectady, Albany have been losing people into the surrounding countryside. And it's been that population spread that has really driven the loss of farmland in large areas of upstate New York.
And so I feel like one of the challenges with regards to losing farmland to development is that no one is tearing down homes or tearing down, you know, strip malls to put up a farm. But when you look at forestry, is that the same issue? When farmland reverts to forestry, I mean, how does that operationally happen? Is the land just abandoned and then trees grow or trees are planted? Or what does that mean?
You know, it's a great question. Some of that land probably is not as productive. You know, not all land is created equal when it comes to farming. And so some of that land is probably just more marginal and maybe wasn't, best suited to being in farming. But a fair amount of that land, I would guess, is just the circumstance of, you know, farmers not able to make a good living on that land. And as they went out of business and nobody was there to take their place, the land slowly kind of reverted from active agagricultural use to some brush and some other, successional species, and then eventually got, you know, taken over by forest. I will say that trend is not irreversible. And we see as there's more market opportunities and farmers able to make a better living, you could actually see that land potentially come back into agriculture. And that is, I think, that would be an exciting trend, to have land that's appropriate for farming and brought back in agriculture in a thoughtful way. That would be a real exciting sign of success and of opportunity here in New York.
Well, David, we are going to take just a short break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about this 33% increase in farm goods sold. So hang tight. You're tuned into the Farm Report on the Heritage Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
Today's music is by Obesity on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
All right, we're back. You're tuned into the Farm Report on the Heritage Radio Network. We are on the line with David Haight, who's the New York State Director for American Farmland Trust. And we are going over the preliminary report for the most recent U.S. Census of Agriculture. So, huge increase in agricultural sales that was shown over this last census period, this last 5-year chunk of time. Market value of crops, livestock, and total agriculture product at record highs. Now, I feel like we know enough to know that this increase is not probably being seen equally across all agriculture sectors. And I'm wondering if we have that information yet, and what questions we should be asking when we see 33% increase. that sounds like things are going great. You know, are they, aren't they, are they more for some groups than others? You know, how do we kind of understand these numbers?
You know, Aaron, that's a great question, and I think we know a little bit now, and a lot more will become clearer from the information that's going to come out in May. I think as in the preliminary numbers, we saw that, yeah, there was this really big growth in nationally in overall farm sales, and it does point to the a couple of things. One, that the commodity prices for things like corn and soybeans and other field crops have been really high in recent years. And there have been kind of record numbers of acres kind of brought into the production of those crops. And that has, that actually crops, sales of crops have actually surpassed sales of livestock for the one of the first times in 30 or 40 years. So that is kind of a national trend that is significant. I think here in New York, you know, we still don't have the specific kind of commodity by commodity information. Traditionally, about half of all the farm sales in New York have been associated with dairy and production of milk and other, you know, cheese, yogurt, other processed products. So we don't really know if that continues to be the case, but certainly we would expect that dairy farms would continue to be a significant contributor to our farm sales. And we did see last year that New York retook the spot for this being the third largest milk producer in America. So I think that's something that we'll be interested to take a look at when the full census comes out in May.
Yeah, we'll have to follow up with you then because I'd be curious to see how that shakes out. Well, what I want to spend the rest of our time talking about is this change in new farmers. You know, I was surprised that to hear that there's been a decrease because I feel like the general kind of media vibe out there, there's a lot of attention and a lot of energy going towards supporting new farmers and you know, people transitioning from other careers into farming. So can you talk a little bit about kind of were these numbers a surprise to you? And then I would love to hear some of the strategies that American Farmland Trust is going to be employing to kind of facilitate entry for new farmers.
Well, so a couple quick things, Aaron. So when we talk about beginning farmers, for the United States Department of Agriculture, they define a beginning farmer as anybody that's been in agriculture for less than 10 years. And a new farmer is somebody that's been in farming for less than 1 year. So really the trends that I talked about were about those beginning farmers, and they aren't necessarily young. They can include young people, but sometimes beginning farmers include people that have already, you know, this is their second, third, or fourth career. They're military veterans, or people have immigrated here from other countries. So there's a pretty broad cocktail of people that make up that beginning farmer category. Candidly, I was actually really surprised to see this drop in beginning farmers, and I'm really intrigued to better understand when the full census comes out, kind of what we can learn about the trends of people in that category. What we know now are just some of the raw numbers, where there was this 20% drop in beginning farmers nationally, an 11% drop in New York. Now, again, in New York, the beginning farmer category still makes up about almost a quarter of all of our farmers are in that beginning farmer category. So it's still a significant category, but it's not as big as it was 5 years ago. The other thing I'll point out is the one place we have seen growth are at the ends of the age spectrum. So there actually was an increase in the number of young farmers in New York from the last census. So now 6% of all of our farmers in New York are under 35. But again, the other end of the age spectrum also grew. So now almost 30% of our farmers are over 65. So we've got people that are going to be transitioning out of agriculture in the next 5 to 10 years, and then we really have got to work on yanking that next generation up onto land and have them be successful here in New York.
So You know, I'm curious, like, what are some of the strategies for kind of, and some of it, I would say, linking those two populations, where you have, on one hand, have this group of retiring farmers, people who are going to age out of the farming practice, or, you know, to be a little dark, to pass away. Then you have this group of young farmers who are emerging, and are these age groups being represented on, like, the same farm where there's a need for succession planning, or are we seeing kind of a separation of, like, you know, multi-generational farm families are transitioning, and there's a need to kind of bring new blood, so to speak, onto the farm? Or, I mean, do you have a sense of that, or...
You know, Aaron, that is a really insightful question, because one thing we don't know with these numbers is, in some of these cases where a farmer that responds to the census and identifies that they're over 65, they may have someone on the farm, either within their family or outside the family, that's poised to take over. They may already be on the farm right now, but it's the older member of the family that fills out the census. So we really, at this stage, we don't know how many of those farmers that are over 65 already have a next generation. So that is a really insightful question. Even if there is a next generation, though, we can't assume that that is going to be an easy process of transition, because you're talking about, in many cases, within farm families, having to transition a business and the management of that business, and that can be rocky. But then you also have the transfer of the farm itself, and that can be really challenging, because for many farm families, the farm is the biggest asset that they own. And if you have one child that wants to come home to the farm, and you have three other kids that are off doing other things, figuring out how you divide up the farm assets or the family's estate without forcing that one kid that wants to stay home on the farm to have to sell the farm to buy out their siblings, it's really tough. And unfortunately, there are too many cases where farms have been lost to development because farm families weren't ready to make that transition. So one of the things we're doing right now is we are working with a network of partners to launch this new partnership in the Hudson Valley called the Hudson Valley FarmLink Network. So later this spring, you're going to see us launch a new website called Hudson Valley Farmland Finder, which is going to help connect farmers looking for land with landowners or farmers that have land available for lease or purchase. And then we're going to be hosting a series of trainings for both farmers and that are facing that transition process or farmers and landowners that are thinking about leasing land. And so we've got some great new programs that are coming up to try to tackle those problems.
Because that is, like, one of the biggest challenges or kind of barriers for new farmers is land access, is finding land, even if the land is there, knowing where it is. And then I think the infrastructure and the community around that. Can you talk a little bit about kind of the work you've done looking at building some of those linkages or what you see as kind of opportunities for some other groups or some future things to kind of step in to help support young farmers in their search for land?
Well, you're absolutely right that the cost of buying a farm is one of the primary barriers to a farmer to getting into agriculture. You could imagine if you're on Eastern Long Island, you could be talking about, you know, several hundred thousand dollars an acre to buy land. And if you're going to buy, you know, acres to support a commercial farm operation, you could be talking about millions of dollars to buy a farm. And so I'll give you a sneak peek. We're about to release a new report about beginning farmers across America and how they're finding success in getting into agriculture. And it's not just a problem here in New York, that this is a challenge. In some places, it's where beginning farmers are competing with other farmers that are already established and have more money, more capital. In other places, like in parts of New York, It's beginning farmers competing with real estate developers. And it is just a really big challenge in finding ways to drive down the price of land so that farmers can afford to buy it. Or if there's going to be leases or other arrangements to get access to that land, making sure that they're friendly to farmers and will actually allow a beginning farmer the comfort and the support that they need, not only to get started, but actually to be successful over time.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, David, I know if folks want to find out more about what you guys are up to, they can visit the website, newyork.farmland.org. But aside from visiting the website and kind of reading up, what's the best way for folks to support your work?
You know, that's a great question, Aaron. At some level, there is something people can do every day, and being cognizant about thinking about where your food comes from and really being thoughtful about buying locally, and also looking at your community institutions, whether it be schools, hospitals, colleges, and really trying to push for getting more of our community institutions to buy locally. But you've also got an incredible voice, and everyone does, to our political leaders, that we need to make the protection of our farms and our farmland a priority. And we need to put public funding and we need to pass legislation to make that happen. And so certainly going to our website, looking us up on Facebook, there are many political voices that we need to help sing in this chorus. So please join us in this movement to help save the land that sustains us.
David, thanks so much. It was great to have you on. We'll have to have you back soon and often.
Aaron, it's always a pleasure. I love talking with you.
So, folks, that website again is newyork.farmland.org. If you want to take a moment to look at the census results on your own, you can find them at www.agcensus.usda.gov. The preliminary report is up, and then the full report will be available, I believe, beginning of May. So check that out. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of The Farm Report. This, like all 35 of our weekly shows, are available for free. You can visit our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. If you believe in what we're doing, I hope you'll kick in a few bucks and become a member today by clicking that donate tab. And you can also find us on Stitcher Smart Radio and iTunes. So however you do it, stay tuned in, and thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.